Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical company with a focus on helping people with life-altering conditions to lead better lives. While Shire's portfolio of ADHD medicines helps patients diagnosed with ADHD, we recognize the need to provide additional support to them and their families. And that's why we at Shire value our local, regional, and international partnerships that are designed to develop and enhance programs to improve the understanding and awareness of ADHD. At Shire, people diagnosed with ADHD have our full attention. To learn more about Shire, visit www.shire.com.
To Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Today is February the 15th in the year 2012 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. With us in our virtual studio is Dr. Russell Ramsey. Our topic tonight, putting ADHD treatments into a context, part two, and this is a sequel to a show that we did the night before Thanksgiving in 2011. We're going to really get into the meat of the show tonight in just a second. A quick announcement, if you haven't done so already, go check us out on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. There you can write on our wall, make some comments, you can access archive shows, you can actually listen to the show live, you can see a list of upcoming shows, et cetera. Also, if you go to the advertisers and giveaways tab, you can enter your email address and we'll actually send you a bi-monthly email with a list of all of our upcoming shows so you don't have to visit the Facebook page to see what's upcoming. I will tell you right now, we only have four or five shows that are posted right now. I was waiting for one particular guest to come on and pick a date. You're going to see five or six shows here posted in the next couple days I'm very excited about. Dr. Ramsey is going to come on talking about his concept of executive function deficit disorder. We're going to have a show about working with those with ADHD, with developmental disabilities, a whole host of stuff. So just be watching for that. Let's get into today's show. Dr. Ramsey came on in November, and I had thought that we could organize ADHD and treatments into a nice little 30-minute show, and boy, was I wrong. Not only did we blow through 30 minutes, but we actually had to have a sequel. In that show, we outlined five things that we really want to cover. One is the key is to begin with treatment is to actually get the right diagnosis, because if you got the wrong diagnosis, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. We wanted to talk about treatments that actually that affect the physical brain, the gray matter, and we kind of covered most of that. What we didn't get to, was treatments that address the thoughtful, mindful brain, you know, our thoughts and beliefs. Then we wanted to talk about exercising the different treatments that can exercise the mind but also have an impact on the physical brain and in other sections. So we're hoping to kind of cover those other pieces tonight. Real quick before we get into the discussion, Dr. Ramsey is the co-director of the University of Pennsylvania Adult ADHD Treatment and Research Program and an associate professor of clinical psychology and psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Dr. Ramsey has presented, written very many things, and I guess, Dr. Ramsey, welcome to the show, and can you just, I prefer you tell everybody about the books that you have, just I think you can do a better job of that, because I want to make sure we highlight that for anybody who's interested. You can go, and we'll share with you how you can access the books later, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about the books that you have?
Sure. First, it's great to be back. I think this is a wonderful program, and you know, I always scroll through the list of upcoming speakers and recommend it to people I work with. The two books we have so far, first is Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Adult ADHD, an Integrative Psychosocial and Medical Approach, which I wrote with my psychiatrist and friend and co-director of the Penn ADHD program, Anthony Rostain. And the other book is Non-Medication Treatments for Adult ADHD. The first, the CBT for Adult ADHD, was published by Routledge, and the non-medication treatments for adult ADHD was published by the American Psychological Association. And we're actually getting ready to do a revised edition of the CBT for adult ADHD book, and we're planning on having a companion workbook with that one.
Excellent. Now, that was the one we talked about back in before on Thanksgiving. That was possibly the New Year's resolution, right?
That's right. So it's actually turning into it's getting actualized.
Excellent. Just to kind of pick up from our last show, we left off, we were talking about treatments for the physical brain, and this is the concept was really things that you can do to optimize your brain so it's working its peak performance so that your mind could kind of take on, we likened it to like the hardware of a computer. If it's not running well, it can't run the most recent operating system as efficiently. And we ended the discussion, we were referring to a show that I had done back in August about acupuncture, which you were kind enough to connect me with Dr. Max Munke, and I was sharing that I had actually was inspired to go out and get some acupuncture myself. And we were talking at the end of that about the placebo effect. And I think that it was a great segue into the treatments for the mind, because when we start to move from the physical brain into the thoughtful, mindful brain, we start to get into a very different atmosphere of beliefs and stuff like that. And since we were talking about that, I had actually gone out and seen a few things on the placebo effect. It was fascinating to me, and I'd like to ask you, I had seen some stuff that the placebo effect is there, but there's another level of it. If you're getting like one pill for a placebo, they find if you get two, the placebo effect is stronger than one. If you were to get a shot of sugar water, it has a stronger effect than if you just took two pills. Is that a bunch of malarkey? Is there something to that?
I'm not familiar with the studies per se, but it would seem as though, like, an expectation we have. So if the view is two pills are stronger than one,
uh-huh.
And also an injection must be more serious or more potent than a pill, it would make sense that the expectation and how we can at times to a certain degree fulfill those expectations – it would absolutely make sense that would happen.
So if the placebo effect is there's something to it, then it's interesting. So we start to segue into the, because we talked last time, you know, the pill doesn't give you the skill, or you had some real clever
right.
thing that was there, because when we talk about multimodal treatment, there's the one to optimize the brain, but we start to move into the mind side. It gets a little crazy, and I know that one of the first levels of the mind side is actually information and education. Would you agree that that's kind of the entry point?
Right. And I think we'll use the phrase within the psychosocial treatments for adult ADHD, and I think it's true with a good psychiatrist and the medications. It's psychoeducation, but even that's a little generic, because we're not just talking about, well, here's what ADHD stands for, here are the different subtypes, here's the prevalence within the United States. We're talking about a true, personalized, felt experience of, let's understand the role ADHD plays in your life, the examples of the difficulties you encounter, and how do we understand them from an ADHD standpoint. I like what one of my colleagues, how she described it in ADHD and some other areas. It's helping to make that which is invisible to the person visible. You have a framework now for understanding it, so these things that may be recurring in one's life that the person ends up scratching their head going, how the heck did that happen to me again? How did I miss a deadline or wait too long? Now there's a framework for understanding, here's what happens, here's why it's so difficult, and hopefully now here's what we can do about that to change the patterns that before felt like they unfolded automatically.
That's to turn the invisible into the visible. There's something about that that's got me like on edge, because it is because when you if you can make it tangible, and you, I'm thinking out loud here, is by having that education to realize it wasn't random, there's there, and actually being able to see it around and make it more tangible, actually starts to explain stuff, so you just don't think it's random, like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one, there's something here.
Right. It's like one of those pictures where you have the illusion.
Yeah.
Like, do you see the old lady or the young woman, or do you see, I forget what it is, the vase or the two faces?
Yep.
Once you get it, you can see them both. You've gotten it. And it's, I think it's the same way sometimes with understanding ADHD. It's once you understand what's happening and you can break it down into the component parts, I mean, change is still difficult. It's many of the coping strategies, and I'm sure you see this in coaching, and I'll tell patients I work with in CBT, you may not hear anything new in here. It's not going to be anything earth-shattering. It's better to break down a large task into small things. It's useful to have a plan for your day, but it's the implementation of these things and understanding how they can go awry rather than getting to the end of the day saying, oh, my gosh, I didn't keep to my schedule again. What happened?
That's interesting that you say that, because in a similar way, I frequently tell, like, talking when people will call me up early on, like, what do you do? Well, I'm a coach, but I like to call myself an attention coach because I can't change you. But it's really about what you pay attention to. And I like this analogy, because a lot of people can identify. It's like ADDers were born left-handed in a right-handed world. And if you think about the statistics, I guess 10% of people are left-handed.
Right.
And maybe, you know, 4 to 8% are ADD, depending on who you talk to. But you spend your whole time trying to use right-handed solutions.
Right.
So in the moment that we actually say, hey, listen, you're left-handed, and you actually pay attention to it, well, duh, I'll play golf with left-handed golf clubs. But it's nothing new. You kind of vaguely knew that you were left-handed, but you never looked in the context of finding solutions based on being left-handed. And in a similar way, I love your metaphor about, you know, you see the picture and then you see the vase. Once you begin to see it, you see it for what it is. Now you're in a better position to manage it.
Right.
And there's that side of it. And I think the education thing is there, but let's talk about awareness and mindfulness. In your world, kind of what does that mean on from your perspective, and how does that help those with ADHD?
Right. And you know, some of these, the words mindfulness, awareness, they can mean a lot of different things. One, and, you know, I'm holding in my hand, actually, just before we came on this show, I got a new book called The Mindfulness Prescription for Adult ADHD. It's a new book by Lydia Zylowska, who's done some research on mindfulness for adults with ADHD. But, you know, so mindfulness is a whole different category that I'll put on the side for the moment. If we're talking about let's just say awareness, how I would sort of define that in helping patients, it's going through and making choices, going through one's life and being informed about what you're doing, the decisions you're making, and, you know, another nice phrase for it is being intentional, intentionality.
Uh-huh.
Because I think various people in various ways that work in adult ADHD, we talk about it being an intention deficit disorder, difficulty following through on what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
and things that are priorities. So it's identifying what are your intentions and then identifying the barriers to fulfilling those intentions. And I think your metaphor of a left-hander and a right-hander's world is quite a good one, because I think very often folks with ADHD, they will, and it makes sense why, follow the generic recommendations for, well, here are ways to get organized, or, you know, here's a way to manage time better. And it may be good stuff, but for folks with ADHD, it's incomplete. It's assuming
mm-hmm.
that, well, you get a planner, you write everything down, and that might work well for the 90% without ADHD who say, okay, yes, and I will keep the planner with me, and I will choose the right planner and one that I will not forget to bring with me, and I will not talk myself out of using it at the moment. Or if I do forget to put something down, I'll remember it later. Somebody with ADHD, each of those examples may be a point at which, first, executive function problems interfere with making use of the planner.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, and this speaks to what we were talking about you know, maybe the thoughts and beliefs, if the conclusion, if and when the adult with ADHD forgets to write something down and then misses an appointment as a result, then when the conclusion based on that and similar experiences is, you see, nothing ever works for me, I can't do it, and then they stop doing it. And then what we would agree is probably still a good coping skill gets contaminated, not because it doesn't work, but because the executive dysfunction got in the way of using it, and then it gets personalized. And then that negative outlook, and as I've said before, and I think I've written in every paper I've written about this, adult ADHD is not the result of negative thinking. However, it is certainly a traveler that goes along with it, particularly for adults, that can get in the way of following through on reasonable goals and interferes with the implementation of effective coping strategies.
Well, it's interesting. I had interviewed a professional organizer years ago, and she basically said, you know, you set up a system, but no system's perfect. Not everything is going to fit in the bucket, the label, or kind of whatever. So there's never a perfect organizational system. And if you're holding yourself to that standard and something doesn't work and you miss writing something down and then all of a sudden you think it doesn't work, that goes back to that placebo effect to a certain extent. Because if you don't think it's working, it has the same effect going in the other direction.
Right. And I think that's a great point. And it's how but again, sometimes one of the other thoughts, distorted thoughts that folks with ADHD have is comparative thinking, looking at their friends, colleagues, family members without ADHD. And, you know, one aspect of the distortion is it's so much easier for everybody else. They don't have to do these things. They don't seem like they have to write things down as much as me. And that might be a distortion that, well, yeah, the person actually does, but there's that positive glow that, well, they don't seem to be working as hard as I am on it. Now, that there might be a grain of truth to that, but usually when somebody's, and this speaks to something you say about directing attention and using awareness, once you turn your focus to, you know what, ask your friend or really take a look at your cubicle mate at work and see when they're on the phone, are they writing down appointments? Are they writing down things in the meeting? Again, once you start looking for it, you'll see it and you'll challenge that negative view. Maybe it's not exactly negative, but, well, other people really don't have to write things down. They actually are able to memorize their whole schedule. No, they may have the iPhone, they may have the planner, and so it's directing awareness to that. And we also talk about directing awareness to ourselves and what we do. And we know that one of the ways that the executive dysfunction interferes with coping is it interferes with effective self-monitoring. It's not all or nothing, not that somebody doesn't have the capacity for it. They may have to do it differently. It may take some more effort. But, you know, we can come up with ways to get enough self-monitoring, self-focused information to be helpful.
Well, in a second, I want to kind of transition because there's some things I want to talk about. Is there's coaching, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, there's NLP, there's therapy and counseling, stuff like that. Before we make that leap, I'd like your thoughts. I had I've had a couple people different on the shows. One, David Gwork, heads up and runs the ADD Coaching Academy, and he's got this big saying, paying attention to what you pay attention to. And Greg Kirch was on September of 2011. I can't remember if it was the first or second week, but I had him on because he kind of caught me off guard at one time because he was giving this talk, and I thought it was on meditation, and he said, everybody, let's meditate for a second, focus on an object for just a minute, and he said, everybody be quiet, and you looked at this object, and he said, okay, when you're done, how many people noticed that their mind started to wander away from the object? And in the room, everybody's hand went up, I mean, almost everybody, and he said, great, you meditated correctly, which caught me off guard. He said, you have to practice it. The idea really is you start to notice your thoughts, and you bring them back, and you don't judge them. And I'm teeing this up because it was interesting thought for me, and a lot of people that I work in the coaching is to begin to notice. It's almost like an outer body experience. Watch yourself and notice your patterns of behavior, notice your thoughts and how you instinctively kind of react to them, because if you begin to notice that, hey, I get really emotional when these types of things happen, you can actually begin to see your patterns, and that awareness or mindfulness or whatever you paying attention to, what you pay attention to, whatever, once you notice that pattern, it actually kind of puts you in choice. And I'm interested in your thoughts on that, because it's kind of like kind of detaching yourself and kind of watching yourself, at least your thoughts, which would put you in a position to manage that. And in a second, we're going to talk about coaching and CBT, and I think it'll go in a different direction. But can you speak? What are your thoughts on that?
I am totally on board with that. I think there's a bunch of terms you can use for it. Meta-awareness or meta-attention, mm-hmm. being aware of what you're aware of. It's a metacognition, being able to think about your thinking, you know, being
yep.
aware of the process. And I think not just in ADHD, in other situations, just in life in general, but I think the notion it normalizes, you know, our attention does drift when we're trying to, you know, focus on one thing, but how do we deal with that? Can we be aware that our attention does that, or sometimes it's our effort, but still, as you said, in a non-judgmental way, in a non-disruptive way, being able to gently nudge ourselves back to where we want to be. And I think what happens with folks with ADHD, it's where there can be all-or-nothing assumptions. Okay, my mm-hmm. attention's broken, so there's nothing I can do about it. I can't resist this. And we know folks with ADHD are more susceptible to having a train of thought or effort disrupted. And also, you mentioned it's an important term, and I know Russ Barkley talks a lot about it, the role of emotional regulation. We're not talking getting interrupted by a panic attack
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
a major depressive episode. We're talking about, and this, there's a cognitive element of it too, the normal frustration, emotion
yep.
that anybody would have in response to something. Or, you know what, boredom is
yep.
an emotional state. But rather than getting too activated by it or viewing it as this ruined what I was trying to do and there's nothing I can do about it, being able to feel the emotion but recognize that it doesn't mandate your actions, you still have a choice to go back and still face the boredom, tolerate it, and guess what? Usually we find by getting engaged behaviorally, that can be an antidote for how we're feeling.
Yep.
Because if we feel something's boring, but we actually get into it and we find, well, there may be 10 other things I'd rather be doing right now, but now it's not the most exciting thing, but I am feeling better because I'm getting it done rather
yep.
than avoiding it. And I use the metaphor, we don't have to be 100% convinced. We're talking like swing votes in Congress. We just
yep.
have to convince 3 or 4 Congress people to vote the other way
yep.
and get engaged in the task, and then our experience takes us. And that's important for folks with ADHD, with the negative thinking or the behavioral patterns, to have a chance to change the patterns, have new, if you will, corrective experiences that provide new information. And this is something we spoke of before. Even though we're saying that this might be the level of the software, those sorts of experiences have an impact on the physical brain as well.
We're going to talk about it a little bit. I want to precursor this because when we want to go to a break in a second, when we come back, we're going to start getting into the different types of therapies in this area, coaching, therapy, CBT, NLP, all stuff. But before we do, I do want to highlight, in my experience, it's been kind of funny because as I've worked with people on the coaching side, there's a little bit biased, to get them to notice their thoughts. It's funny, I'm working with an individual who, it's funny, they started kind of catching themselves, and they would go, oh, there goes a butterfly, because the moment they go, there goes a butterfly, they realize that they're kind of off. And the admonition of that puts them in choice, and then they start kind of going back, okay, where was I, to get them kind of back on track.
Right.
So as they notice their thoughts and they catch themselves, it's cool because they've labeled it and it puts them in choice. And when they say that, all of a sudden it brings them back, and it's a marker to kind of take them back. And it's amazing how if you start to notice what you're thinking and noticing and you catch yourself, it's an incredible skill, because once you catch it, you're immediately in choice. You're not impulsively going that direction, and you can redirect your behavior just by learning to observe yourself.
Yeah, and I think, and how I put it with some people, it's these things then, well, I won't say never, but probably will, to a less frequent degree, won't be able to blindside you or be invisible the way they were before, because you still have the choice. Some people
yep.
will say, I know I was procrastinating when I clicked on this link, but I did it anyway. But that's still progress, because now rather than 15 minutes in finding yourself on this website, you know what you're doing, and that's all we can ask for. Then you have the choice to, I'm still going to go to this website rather than working on the document, but just being able to catch it and use it as a cue for understanding what's going on, that's huge.
That, what you just said is brilliant. The moment that you notice it and you still choose to do it anyway, you made a conscious choice to do it.
Right.
and it's not an impulsive choice. You rationalized your reason or whatever, and you can learn from that. So I want to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll start getting into some of the more detailed stuff. Dr. Ramsey, if somebody's got a question from our last shows, I presume it's still okay if they send you an email, right?
Yes, and let me give you the email. It's my last name, Ramsey, R-A-M-S-A-Y, at mail, M-A-I-L, dot med, M-E-D, dot UPenn, U-P-E-N-N, dot E-D-U. Or if you do a Google search for Penn Adult ADHD, I think somewhere on the website it probably links to my address.
And if they're interested in your book, they can just go to Amazon and just search Dr. Russ Ramsey.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon, and I certainly know the second book, The Non-Medication Treatments for Adult ADHD, is available through the American Psychological Association, too.
And with that, we'll be right back after this message.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
This is your ADHD information station, Attention Talk Radio. You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're with Dr. Russ Ramsey in our virtual studio. Before the break, we recapped a little bit of the first show. We talked about we're focusing this episode, at least this portion of it, on treatments for the thoughtful, mindful brain. Those are the thoughts and beliefs. And we talked about the need for information, education, psychoeducation, and really understanding kind of what's there. We got into awareness, mindfulness, those types of things, and I think those are really good building blocks. One is to understand what's going on. Two is start to become aware of it. And now, Dr. Ramsey, we're opening up the floodgates. From my perspective, I'm interested in other things that I might have missed, but there's coaching, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, there's NLP, there's traditional therapy and counseling, and maybe a host of others, which for me, I call myself an attention coach, because when we're in the thoughtful, mindful process, to me, it's really about changing what you're paying attention to. Just like the left-handed, right-handed metaphor, I can't change who you are, at least this is my philosophy, but if you were left-handed and you've been paying attention to right-handed solutions, what I'm trying to do is hopefully help you pay attention to that you're left-handed and look for left-handed solutions. Or if you've been focused on what you can't do, let's pay attention to what you can do, which, by the way, usually most people don't understand what they're good at or what they do right in a day. And so before we get into this, I'm lumping all this stuff into – these are all different ways and different techniques. Essentially, we're trying to change what you're paying attention to. Is that – what do you think of that? Is that accurate, or am I missing something?
I think it's probably one part and probably a foundational piece of a larger process where – you know, once you start changing what you're paying attention to, how you're paying attention to it, well, there's going to be a cascade then of well, then you're going to interact with it differently.
Yep.
Because all of a sudden, then, if we change something academically, occupationally,
yep.
there's going to be different options for how we engage in it.
Yep.
And then I know one of the things when we're describing our CBT approach, we talk about, you know, really a big focus is implementation and engagement.
You know,
it's really about experience. We can talk about changing thoughts till we're blue in the face. The goal is to really take it outside the consulting room, take it in the classroom, in the workplace, in relationships, wherever our brain goes, and talk about implementing the skills, but just interacting differently with these various facets of our life, hopefully gathering some new and different experiences. And then from that, you know, having new outlooks, and that affects how things look to us. So I really think what you described captures it well, excuse me, but it's part of a larger process and, you know, one that is really helpful for a lot of people.
You said something that is, I can't tell you how huge it is me, is because I'm saying theoretically you change what you pay attention to, but you mentioned the word experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's like that's a person's laboratory in the world. Is you can think it one thing, but you actually have to go out and apply it to actually experience it to see if it actually works.
Right.
And that's a huge part of, I think, a lot of these, is that we can talk all day long, you can read all the literature, but until you actually go out and apply it and see what works and doesn't work, and I can't emphasize that enough, because my personal feeling is everybody has their own version of reality, and you have to actually run a science experiment. So if it's like, okay, if this works, you actually have to go out and do it and see what those results are, not just once, a couple times, to see if there's a pattern, to see if it emerges, because it's like your own individual science. If we come up with a hypothesis that your to-do list is drawing pictures as opposed to a list, you actually have to do that a couple times to see if it works. And the only way you can do that is actually to experience it.
And that's a good point. And I know my colleague, Tony Rothstein, we were talking about something along these lines the other day, and talking about the notion of allowing yourself, giving yourself permission for enough practice
mm-hmm.
in these new ways of doing things, because that's the old way, or let's say some of the negative beliefs or the limiting patterns,
yep.
they may have had decades head start. So it's really not fair if you give the planner or some of these coping skills like, you know, 1 week to see if they work. It's not a fair fight. Now, a lot of times people, if they start, even if they don't have it 100% yet, if they start getting some initial positive returns, they'll be curious enough, or they'll see where it's going where, okay, I know this is a longer-term process and I'm getting something out of it. I want to keep going with this. But some folks may have been more demoralized from their past experiences, or may stumble out of the gate a little bit where, and I think this is part of the experience a lot of individuals go through, is having a positive connection with a coach, a therapist, a psychiatrist, somebody who understands ADHD and can give accurate support and
yep.
and help, not just, you know, some, you know, feel good witticisms, but really saying, yes, I understand, and I can help you understand why you're stumbling, but also how to get up and move forward with these skills and to gain the experiences. And so, yes, I think the actual experience and people allowing themselves to practice and gain multiple experiences over time, it gets de-emphasized a little bit. I think it's inherent in a lot of what we and other people talk about, but it's something that people may need to be reminded of, that it takes time to practice, allow yourself to get comfortable, allow yourself to personalize it. Like you said,
yep.
make it a to-do list with pictures rather than letters and words.
Absolutely. On the coaching side, I want to kind of get the coaching side. I want to kind of throw a few things out on my side, and then you're more schooled on the CBT side,
right.
And I like to talk about that, and we'll kind of go into some other stuff. But I'll tell you, when I'm working with somebody, and I'll give an example, is I'll work with them for a period of time. Say, listen, I procrastinate, and I say, listen, go out and tell me. I want you to notice every time you procrastinate, come in, tell me about all those times. And I have found that many of those, and I'm generalizing here, everybody's different, is many of those with ADHD procrastinate. If it's repetitive and boring, that's one commonality. Another one is if you don't know what to do, or something's unclear.
Right.
And they get confused by, well, I know that I need to go to the web and look this thing up. They think they understand what to do, but what they're not clear on is how long is it going to take me to find this on a website? Because I can tell you, I've been to some websites, and it's taken me for hours to find something because it's misnamed, and I don't know how long it's going to take me, and I don't know where it's going to be in that moment if I'm not really clear and I can accomplish something like pay some bills. I might go pay those bills because I can. I feel like I got something done, as opposed to jumping into this thing and I have no. It could take me 5 minutes. It could take me 6 hours. I don't know. And so that ambiguity is there. So once we understand that, and I'll take an example. Many of those with ADHD struggle with repetitive, boring, routine tasks. And what I do is try to find out. Okay, so what stimulates your brain? What attracts you? And a common thing is many with ADHD are very verbal. And I have found many of them is like, okay, if talking to somebody is stimulating to you, then what would it be like if you called somebody to talk through a business problem while you were doing something really repetitive and routine? And many times that, because it's a no-brainer to do this repetitive task, as long as they're doing something that's stimulating, they can actually do things that they weren't necessarily, they couldn't do. For example, I've worked with people where they've listened to iBooks and different types of things while they were doing, like they're mowing the grass or whatever, because it brings some stimulation to the party because that ignites them, or talking to somebody on something that's intellectual while you couldn't mow the grass and do that. So you're kind of combining those things, and they didn't necessarily realize you're changing the environment based off of what stimulates their brain and keeps their interest. And on a coaching side, it's as simple as I realize – you like to talk your way through problems, so find a problem that you have, call somebody, talk to them, help, ask them to help you think your way through it, and then do something as stupid as rearranging your sock drawer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think everything that you said is brilliant and very similar. I mean, it's rooted in good behavioral principles. You know, pairing something that we say is mundane, some sort of task like putting folding clothing or whatever, and I think a lot of people may have stumbled upon this naturally. What will they do? They'll fold clothing while watching television. And so in a way, rather than emphasizing folding clothing, it's like, well, I'm watching television, and while I'm doing this thing that I enjoy or listening to music or talking with somebody, I'll take care of this other more mundane task. So it's almost like flipping the billing of it. So rather than top of the bill being, oh, I've got to do this mundane task, it's the top of the bill is, you know what, I'm going to listen to my iPod, or I'm going to, you know, have a conversation, watch TV, and oh, by the way, I'll take care of this while I'm doing it. Now, not all tasks lend themselves to, you know, something competing like that. Like, somebody can't have a conversation maybe when they're doing something like complex mathematics. But the principle, having pleasant music in the background, wearing something comfortable, having a cup of tea or coffee, somehow pairing it with a positive. And you mentioned something else, and I think it's crucially important. And again, it's how somebody without ADHD, and this will be a timely topic right around now, they may have the notion, okay, this week I have to work on my income taxes.
Yep.
But without saying anything aloud, in their head they may be going, all right, that's a big task. What do I need to do first? Well, let me just gather up all my W-2 forms receipts. And they already in their head have started to break down the large task into a manageable chunk so that it's clear, it's still far from being an enjoyable task, but it's one that they view as manageable, and any negative feelings probably aren't that strong. You take an adult with ADHD who says, I've got to work on taxes this weekend, and there may be some of that confusion about, oh my gosh, where do I start, and the forms confusing, and now all of a sudden we've got this, what we talked about before, the negative feeling coming up associated with it.
Yep.
And that's going to be a recipe for avoidance, not because the person didn't have a plan or didn't know what needed to be done or somehow forgot about income taxes. The specific task was large, vague, nonspecific, so there's all this negative feeling but nothing there to relieve it. Like you said, be it coaching, sort of breaking things down in CBT, or you know, sometimes just a wise friend might say, well, why don't you start with this? We can break it down into a manageable task where all of a sudden we're working on our taxes, but we're not worried about doing it all. We've got a manageable piece. And again, that goes back to something we were talking about before. Now we can have a different experience with doing a difficult task. And one, we still may not enjoy it, but we can look at it and say, but you know what? Now I have evidence that says I can do it.
Well, it's interesting. Again, I like how you brought it back to the experience, because to me it's about rearranging the environment and the experience. And would a CBT type of thing be to take it and break it down into these smaller chunks and then bring clarity to work your way through those chunks?
Absolutely. I mean, the behavioral steps, and there's a lot of terms we could use that we're talking about chunking, breaking a
yep.
large task down into smaller components. We can talk about reverse engineering or backwards planning. Where do you want to end
yep.
up? Let's move backwards and come up with, well, what are all the steps involved in getting where you need to be? So now we can forget about the end point. We know what you're shooting for. What's the first step? I use this example. I mean, I think this is true. It has a role with people who are depressed, who might have negative thoughts about, well, I can't do that. It's too much. We can have somebody who says, oh, I can't cook. Okay, you
yep.
can't cook. Can you take a saucepan out? Yes, I can do that. Can you fill it with water? Yes, I can do that. Can you put it on the stove and turn it on high? And all of a sudden you do all the component parts. Sometimes the phrase, the whole is greater than the sum of its
yep.
parts. And that can be a negative thing if we say, oh, I can't do taxes.
Yep.
But when we break it down to the component parts, we find you can do each of these steps. It's just a matter of piecing them together. And that can be complex for folks with ADHD because there is persistence over time and difficulties following through. You might get, okay, I got my taxes ready. I just have to fill out the forms, and then we're rushing to do that at 10:58 p.m. on April 15th. But it is a starting point in terms of, again, changing the experience, changing the interaction, and maybe, challenging the negative self-views as well. And it's emotional management as well.
It's interesting because I can kind of go both ways. On a CBT side, breaking it down, the summer parts, and all of a sudden, you work away. Can you do this? Can you get a pot? Can you put oil? Can you boil it? And all of a sudden, you made a meal. There's a little bit of clarity in breaking it down on those steps
yeah.
From a coaching side that once I get clarity to do it, I have to tell you on the other side, I've worked with some people like, okay, you're very social. Yes, your taxes are coming up. It's repetitive, routine, and boring. You have a hard time with visualizing some of that stuff. I've actually had some people before where I've worked with them and they had 3 or 4 years of back taxes, and I said, well, you're a social, what would it be like if you threw a party? And their obstacle was, well, I don't want anybody in my finances, so what if you set up stations so nobody sees the sum of the parts, but there's some stuff there. And I literally had a guy one time who literally, he was well past his 30s, threw a little party, got a keg, had some friends come over and parted the stuff out, threw a party and got 3 years worth of taxes all caught up. He threw the party, but he got some experts over and had some fun with it and used the socialization, which, again, is people like, wow, you mean I'm going to have a party to do my taxes? I mean, that's such a different experience. But it goes back to me, when you're dealing with the mind in terms of treatment, let's go back to what works for you and try to figure out an environment and an experience and stuff that would work for you that can actually move it forward. And so as I hear you talk about CBT, the fundamentals of bringing some clarity, breaking this thing down, trying to change that environment. Coaching, it's a similar type thing, but the roots are all the same. In NLP,
yeah.
we did a show, you listen to them, it's there's really not that much difference because, it comes at different ways, and one might be better for you than another based off of your experiences or how you pay attention or your perception of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're helping to adjust how you're looking at going about a task, how you're paying attention to a task, how you're perceiving it, what it looks like in order to kind of get that done. Going back again, these are treatments to deal with the thoughtful, mindful brain that's as individual as anybody.
Right. No, I agree with everything you said. And, yeah, there's a lot of convergence. I did an article for Attention Magazine, I think it was the December issue, and I used a metaphor. A lot of times ADHD, it's like those invisible fences for dogs. That you get shocked, the dog gets a correction sensation, something like that. But if you go past the boundaries, there's that negative feeling. So the
mm-hmm.
dog learns to stay in the yard even though there's no fences. And I think that's what happens with ADHD. You go through school, work, a lot of these things that people say, well, school's good for you, you got to do well, and they encounter difficulties. And then later on, they may feel bound, even though there are no fences there, based on the past learning history and the ongoing difficulties. ADHD does make most aspects of life more challenging. there may be limits. And then I think what we're talking about here, coaching, CBT, other psychosocial treatments, you know, people who, you know, help students specific related to specific academic limitations, how you write a paper, and it could be similar things. If sitting hunched over a keyboard isn't the way of working it, I know I've sat with students in my office and just asked them, tell me aloud about what you want to write on your paper, and with their permission, I'll record them,
yep.
And they pretty much talk out their outline. And that's why the voice-activated software.
Yep.
But I think a lot of what we're doing is help people redefining their fences or transcending their fences, how they, you know, they'll have a thought, well, this is how you have to do it. You have to be alone doing taxes. It's a very
yep.
grim affair.
Yep.
But, yeah, you can invite a friend over. You know what? If somebody said, well, I have to paint my apartment, I'm going to have a painting party. I'm going to invite some friends over. We'll get some painting done, but we're also going to have a lot of fun. It's exactly what we were saying before about pairing a mundane task
yep.
with something enjoyable. Well, that can be done interpersonally. And as you said, the person then gets a lot of, you know, gets their taxes done. And,
yep.
you know, it's a good time. In fact, just using the tax example, I've had people who they haven't done their back taxes and they've been owed refunds from the government. I mean, pretty substantial ones, over $10,000.
Yep.
But the thought of doing it is so aversive, they say, you know what, I'll let them keep it just not to have
yep.
to do the tax forms.
Well,
I mean, that's how strong the aversion can be.
I want to pause here for a second. There is so much brilliance in what the metaphors you just said. It's like a dog actually stays into the yard when there's no fences because it's kind of beaten down for a period of time.
Right.
You've been conditioned to think a certain way. And, again, I'm generalizing here a lot because there is NLP, there's therapy, counseling, CBT, and coaching. You can kind of pick your poison, but a lot of that is actually to work with you to realize, hey, wait a second, do you realize that there are no fences? You've been conditioned to think this way over a period of time for whatever reason, and you – I love the metaphor you said, because if you work with them over a period of time, you say, it's obvious there's no fences. You're the one that's putting the fences up, not everybody else. And it's about venturing out for them to test, oh, I guess there's not a fence. Or in the case of, like, in my house, we got an invisible fence for our dog around our house, and
mm-hmm.
it stays in the yard. But it's been turned off for 3 years because there's been a cut, and the dog doesn't test it because he's been conditioned to think that he's going to get shocked when it's
right.
no longer there. And I love how it is, because so much of this side of it is really that it's coming over that belief system that you're going to get shocked before in the past because you either misconstrued or didn't understand or took out of context or whatever, and to venture past that and to kind of figure some stuff out and to see a little different way. I just wanted to highlight that because I love that metaphor. Absolutely love it.
Right. And you know, and it goes back to, and it makes sense why it's there. It's self-protective.
Yep.
But it takes doing that experiment of, all right, yes, you might have had a big difficulty in grade school, but, you know, if you want to take this class in this computer software or the certification program, you know what, how can you do it differently maybe than
yep.
before? And give it a try. And you know what, if for some reason it doesn't work out, well, then you've learned something. But usually we're hedging our bets towards something somebody wants to do, is motivated to do, and it may, and again, this is a cognitive challenge as well, you may have to study more or differently than some of your colleagues in the class do, but if your goal is to get it done, can you accept that and tolerate some of the frustration and tension that can come with it,
uh-huh.
but still stay engaged?
Absolutely brilliant. Tell you what, we need to go to another commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to kind of switch topics, but before we do, there's a few things that we didn't cover. One was NLP. I had Dr. Richard Bandler on, which was a co-creator of NLP back
right.
in October. You can go back and dig up some of the archives on that show. Back in October during ADHD Awareness Week, I had Dr. Ari Tuchman on and Barbara Luther talking about the difference between CBT and coaching. So there's some stuff that you can kind of go learn on that. And then if you dig back in the archives, I know we've got some other stuff. So in this space, all we've been talking about is coaching, the belief, the mindset, and the thoughtful stuff. When we come back from the break, Ramsey, I'd like to touch base a little bit on this whole notion of exercises that you can do, the whole neuroplasticity type thing, which is relatively unique and new. Again, we're going to go to break. Again, if you want to have a question for Dr. Ramsey, an email is ramsay at
mail.med.upenn.edu. And with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We have Dr. Russ Ramsey in our virtual studio. In episode one, which was back in November, we covered getting the right diagnosis and treatments for the physical brain. This show, we've been talking about the thoughtful, mindful brain, the importance of getting into education and awareness, and then we've been talking about different ways, CBT, coaching, NLP, counseling, therapy, that they're all designed to kind of work with the thoughtful, mindful brain. Dr. Ramsey, I'd like to kind of shift our stuff. There's things out there right now. I've interviewed a couple different people, and I'm just going to say I'm going to call them attention exercises. I'm not so sure it's the right thing, but these are these computer-based training programs where you're paying attention to some things to adjust the way you're focusing stuff. And I understand the research is the brain is malleable. Like there's this neuroplasticity thing that if you change what you're paying attention to, the physical brain. Can you talk about that space a little bit right now and talk about it as a treatment and its effectiveness?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a wide range of, attention training software, brain games, some targeted on working memory training. And it views attention, working memory, various other cognitive skills like it's a muscle.
Uh-huh.
So if you isolate it and exercise it, you can improve it. And at least in the case of the computerized working memory training, there's some data on children, maybe young adolescents with ADHD and other groups, but that's the ADHD group, that it improves the areas that are targeted and seems to generalize into some other areas such as, I think, problem solving as measured by some follow-up tests.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of the ongoing, practical question is, one, do the gains persist after treatment ends?
Uh-huh.
So it's great while you're doing it, when you're focused on it, but do the gains persist when you stop, or do you have to keep doing it?
Which, mm-hmm.
I mean, sort of like exercise, too. If you stop exercise, you lose
yep,
the muscle mass, the endurance, whatever.
Yep.
And also, how well does it generalize into things important for day-to-day life, like academics, workplace,
mm-hmm.
other things? So I think that's still a question to be empirically answered. But there's some encouraging evidence with some of these programs. Now, and I think Russ Barkley would say this, a lot of these types of exercises for which you may pay for a specific treatment program, and there are some benefits to it. You get some good printouts. You're working with a coach. You're working with or a trainer. You do get a lot for it. However, a lot of the exercises are not dissimilar than what you can see on a handheld electronic device, an app for a phone. So if somebody's pretty good at doing the exercises, and at least for the working memory training program, it is about 30 to 40 minutes per day, 5 days a week for 5 weeks. If you're diligent about doing the exercises, you can probably get the benefits from these downloadable apps or these other exercises. I think the thing is, though, particularly for folks with ADHD, it is speaking about a mundane task, even though we're talking about a video game, they're exercises.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very targeted. It's not like doing a Wii or something where it's just playing tennis or whatnot. They're very targeted skills. And, you know, my understanding from hearing people going through it, the newness wears off after a while, so then it becomes a task, which is, I think, why at least the one program had to institute using a trainer involved to make sure somebody stays on task. But in the short term, at least, the more you do it, it seems to help. Now, there's a question. I'll extend the question. Well, outside of these programs, you know, how malleable is attention and some of these other aspects?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We don't know. We have that conversation during our research meetings to say, on the one hand, boy, if it were that easy, well, let's put it this way. It seems like some past research on children with ADHD, and I think even going into adolescence and whatnot, sort of the self-directed self-regulation, trying to you know, use self-talk or reminding oneself to pay attention, it hadn't yielded very good results. It seemed as though having external supports, you know, a teacher, a coach, whatever, somebody else providing reminders, providing structure, providing reinforcement for on-task behavior, that seemed to work better. Now, if we're talking about adults, and again, this is an empirical question. I don't think I have the right answer for it or an empirically based answer. But the question would be, you know, I think this is a good coping strategy, but if you know you're starting to get tired, your attention's starting to drift, if you can set a marker for, well, I want to go 10 more minutes, I want to get to the end of the page, I promised myself I'd go to 3 o'clock, and using these other skills that we use, self-awareness, knowing, you know, catastrophizing, my attention doesn't have to be perfect to get enough done. If we do those things over time, I don't think it can be done infinitely so, but do we start expanding our attentional capacity? And there's also the question, well, is what we're expanding our actual attentional capacity, or is it our, if you will, behavioral endurance, resilience to be able to keep ourselves going? Is it really attention that's expanding or some other capacity, which, if we're getting done what we want to get done, we really don't care how we're doing it, but it is an interesting research question.
Now, this stuff is it's relatively it's an infancy stage. I mean, this has been around for a couple of years.
Well, you know what? Neuroplasticity, I think it's come from initial research. If people lose a region of the brain or there's some sort of injury, it's how other networks, other regions of the brain compensate for the region that was damaged.
Yep.
So it might be, and forgive me if this isn't actually correct, but metaphorically at the very least, somebody loses their sight, maybe it gets compensated with improved hearing or more sensitive hearing.
Uh-huh.
You know, other senses may come up, or, you know, different regions of the brain may compensate for a region that's injured. Now, from that, we figured, well, if the brain's naturally doing that, well, people who research this, who are interested in it, is this something that can be done intentionally?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I think there are some things, you know, the more we read, the more we're involved in certain, you know, mentally challenging activities. And you know what? There's interesting questions. You know, is there a difference if, and no disrespect to anything I'm about to cite, is there a difference between reading Shakespeare versus reading Sports Illustrated cover to cover?
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, are there certain things that we say, well, within reading, there are better readings to do than others?
Yep.
You know, in terms of building up skill, you know, I don't have the answers to that, but that's the notion of neuroplasticity, sort of the use it or lose it. And I think there's a degree of that isn't controversial. If we stay active with, you know, physical activity, mental activities, but there's still a question, well, what's the right menu of activities to draw from that will produce the most benefit? And what are the limits of it?
Well, what's exciting to me is that that there seems to be something here in the totality of human existence. This is like this is just relatively new, and it clears. There's a lot that we can dial in on this as technology improves and stuff like that, but it's starting to emerge. We're starting to see at least some short-term type stuff, and to me, it's not necessarily something you'd necessarily exclude or mandate, but something to watch over a period of time, because to me, it seems like there's something there, and as we dial that in and get a little bit more routine, we'll actually find its place in this stuff as it could be helpful in the short term, long term, or whatever really makes some sense.
Right, and we can just I'll add in like the whole neurofeedback question, neurofeedback training into that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in reviewing the literature, that's sort of what I came to. There seems to be something there, but we're not exactly sure what it is yet.
Uh-huh. So I guess kind of in summary, these two shows were really to kind of put all this stuff into a context, because you can get overwhelmed by it. And Dr. Ramsey, I think we talked about at the beginning, is make sure you get the right diagnosis up front, because if you don't, if you're not paying attention to the right diagnosis, you're not going to kind of move anywhere. And then we started talking about optimizing the hardware, if you will, exercise and diet, and we talked about thyroid type stuff. We talked about sleep. We talked about stimulant medications, all that stuff to optimize it. And today we've been talking a lot about, okay, the mind, getting information to be able to see what you couldn't see, to become aware of what's there, to actually start realizing that you've been confined in a yard and the fence has been gone for a real long period of time, and venturing out to try to test that stuff, to look at, you know, what your belief systems are and your thoughts, and make some adjustments in some of that stuff. And you can do that. There's a variety
and your behavior
of
patterns, yeah.
Your behavior patterns. And that's probably the most nebulous, because I one time coached a Baptist minister one time, and I said, would you ever try to convert somebody? He said, absolutely not. Their belief system is so strong, it's exercise in futility. And many times when you're working with those with ADHD, if their beliefs are "I'm so bad," it can be very difficult. So it's not as easy an area as black and white science. Then there's this whole other side that's really kind of cool that's emerging, is that these exercises that you're working with the mind and changes the physical brain is a treatment that's emerging. I think it's interesting. I'm anxious to watch it as it unfolds. There's a lot that we don't know. There's a lot that still has to unfold, but there seems to be something there. And the purpose of this was really put these categories, so when you like look at omega fish oils, you can say, okay, this is the physical brain. This is optimizing it. If I've got what I need, there's a limit. If I just take it all day long, there's a point where there's a diminishing return. If I take the stimulant medications, that will help me, but the pill doesn't teach the skill.
Right.
And so it gives us kind of a more robust look at it. Is there anything that we've missed here that we should throw into the mix before we close this thing down?
Yeah, we're at risk of turning this into like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But no, I think, but it's been a blast. Just like those movies are a blast. I really think we've covered the gamut of things. Now that said, there's for each individual with ADHD, there's a different story and different circumstances. So it's really taking these things. There are different, and it's a phrase you used, different environments, different contexts. These things can play out at work, in relationships, in school, and I think this gets not as much attention, but even in one's recreational life, even following through on exercise or hobbies, yes, there's an emphasis on, family life, occupation, there's a lot of areas of impairment, but, recreational life, but also that ties in with personal health and well-being. It can have a negative impact there for not following through on well visits and taking care of one's personal health. So, I think we've covered the different domains, but even, throughout all those domains, it plays out in many different ways in many different people's lives.
So ADHD 24/7.
That's it. There you go.
But with that, Dr. Ramsey, thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been spectacular. As a reminder, anybody, if you've got a question, it's just send an email to ramsay@mail.med.upn.edu. Go to Amazon.com and search for Russ Ramsey and ADHD. You can find his books. And with that, Dr. Ramsey, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
It's great. It's always a pleasure.
We'll have to be in search. You're a great interview, great guest. I'll have to come up with another topic to have you on back real soon. So with that, everybody, thank you very much for joining us. Watch your schedule. We're going to be posting a lot of really good shows. I do know that we have a pre-taped show with Dr. Barkley on his new construct of executive function deficit disorder that's very exciting. And we've got some other things in the mix, so just be looking for looking at our scheduled shows and our subscribe to our newsletter, and we'll keep you posted. So with that, have a great week, everybody.